Episode 64. I'm here with Wayne McCadlow. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's Mo-cad-low. McCadlow.
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 Hell yeah.
You break it into three syllables, it's just easier. People are like, Mo-cad-low? I'm like, no, motherfucker, it's McCadlow.
You
like,
must have those consonants rearranged and jumbled up all the fucking time.
Well, it was originally Mochadwa. So, yeah, Polish. I think when whoever the fuck got off the boat, they changed it to Mo-cad-low.
I
figured
never...
Mocadlo is easier from Mochadwa. It's not that much
interesting.
Easier.
Interesting.
If anything, it's kind of harder. It's more of like a pain in the ass to say.
It's
over.
It's definitely easier. I feel like can you say the Polish name for me one more time?
I think it's Mochadwa.
Mochadwa.
I think.
Does that have like the C with a cool little dash under? Like I feel like on paper, that is not as easy as it sounds out of your mouth.
It sounds like it should, although I'm like a quarter Polish and three quarters Italian, so I don't know how the Polish language works.
Hell yes. Okay. Well, I'm here for episode 64 from everyone. Currently, my quick little plug is I have shirts for sale for pre-order until the 11th, so a couple more days. This will be out. Today's the 6th. It'll be out like the 8th or 9th.
I saw you did shirts with Z.
Z crushed it, rebranded everything here, so everything
Shout
looks cool.
Z. Love that guy.
The king, the best experience I could ever ask for. If you need graphic design, hit up Z. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm here with Wayne, founder of Impossible Kicks. So Impossible Kicks, I know, is a shoe company. I know it has since expanded into reselling other things. My quick little figures here for context. I couldn't find if the first store was in December of 2020 or January of 2021.
Okay, so
right there, yeah.
Yeah, so John and I was pretty much the person who got John into sneakers and kind of like fashion and streetwear. I'm not going to say fashion because John was always liked watches and cars. You know, John always liked that kind of thing. So coming from cars, John kind of had a little retirement going. And he kind of wanted, you know, to be on to the next thing, whatever. And I was doing shoes pretty much full time. I was working at my parents' pottery studio. I was, pouring
Very
pots
cool.
and painting
okay.
cups and shit.
Yeah.
So I was doing that, and I was doing shoes on the side. It's kind of something that I've been doing since high school, on and off, just selling and stopping and selling and reselling and, you know, whatever it may be, clothing or, you know, Pokemon cards or sneakers. It was mostly sneakers. So my brother used to wear, like, dress shoes and, like, baggy jeans and, like, Affliction t-shirts. And, you know, I figured I'd, level him up, you know, got him a pair of Yeezys and said, hey, man, like, it's time to step up your sneaker game.
You can
it's
do
kinda,
better.
Kinda
yeah.
Time to step up your fashion. So got him into shoes a little bit. He started to get addicted. And I kind of showed him that, you know, I did reselling on the side. I said, hey, man, this is pretty lucrative. If you ever want to, like, start a business and, you know, do some sneaker reselling with me, again, it's pretty lucrative. Maybe it'd be up your alley and maybe you'd like it.
Proof of concept there.
So, we started talking about it. We chopped it up about it. And he was like, maybe in the future we'll think about something. And Christmas Eve, Christmas Eve of 2020, he came over and he goes, hey, man, he's like, you know that sneaker concept you were talking about? He goes, let's give it a shot. And in the next week, we picked out the name, kind of narrowed it down to West Farms Mall for location. We figured it's the best foot traffic, best mall in Connecticut. And if not there, then where else? Like, I'm not going to open in like some dusty plaza. Like, nothing is wrong with that. I just figure it's the best way to get across to as many people as possible.
Location, also, location, location.
Absolutely. I feel like your demographic at West Farms, you get West Hartford, Farmington, Newington. You get such a broad demographic of people.
Yep.
So I kind of figured that would definitely be the best spot.
And I saw that now, I have 57 employees and 17 stores as of, I think it was March 2023. Is that ballpark accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it's more employees than that now. We're up to 20 stores. We just opened a Fashion Show Mall in Las Vegas,
which
is a huge milestone for me because I don't know if you've ever heard of a company called Urban Necessities.
I think so.
So Las Vegas-based sneaker company owned by JC Lopez and his wife, Joni Lopez, I think it's. But I was like dreaming of visiting their store. I had an opportunity to visit Vegas when I was on tour with Boundaries in 2018. And I went during the couple days that they had their re-grand opening at Fashion Show because they had a smaller location and they migrated to Fashion Show. And I always thought that mall was dope. Always seeing it on Instagram, like, you think, holy shit, like, I'd love to maybe one day get to visit. And they have a little dog, so it's like I got to go see their little dog. See the huge, you know, wall of sneakers that they had. And at that point, it's like I was able to touch a lot of cool sneakers, but they had like grail stuff, like crazy, like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of shoes.
Yeah.
And I feel like just all seeing that in person, it was probably the first time that I'd been to a bigger sneaker store like that. So that was really exciting. So Urban Necessities is now in Caesar's Palace. office, and their store is triple the size of what it used to be.
Damn.
But it's cool to announce and to say that Impossible Kicks is now in a fashion show, which, you know, I was so excited to see Urban Necessities there, and now I have a store there, which is, that's again, so it's wild. Dude. It's crazy how things, yeah, you know, pan out. And all the respect to, you know, JC and Joni from UN.
That's unreal, dude. I guess for starters, congratulations. It's thanks, unbelievable, man. To see how thank this you. Thing has grown. And like, yeah, I've seen it grow from the outside, and I'm eager to pick your brain on what it felt like on the inside.
Yeah,
I want to
yeah.
start with this parents' pottery business, which I think is a really interesting, like, foundational part of my curiosity coming into this was like, where do you and your brother get the confidence to explore business? And I know you mentioned that like you have the expertise in the product, and he has the business expertise.
Yeah,
but them as a pottery is a really interesting, like, yes, that is the parents who have created art and I assume created a business or run an yeah. industry even. And for them, it's like, yeah, that is the people who spawn kids who then go out in the world and figure out how to make more businesses.
I guess so. Yeah. My father worked for the state, retired. And then as he retired, he kind of helped my mom, you know, create a pottery studio. And it was in Cheshire for like 15, 20 years. And now they're at Foxwoods. So,
that's so sick.
Yeah, it's just that's a paint your own pottery yeah. studio. You walk in anytime. There's stuff on the shelves. You get paint. you paint your stuff with whoever, and we fire it, and you pick it up the next day, and it's
my
easy.
Dad retired within the last year, and my mom is on her way to retire, and my dad's retirement project has been pottery.
So yeah, actually?
Yes. Like, so cool. I have so much pottery upstairs that he's given me, and I need to get some shelves and start putting it up, but like, there is pottery everywhere. I'm laughing.
Did he
like,
give you a greenware or bisque? Do you know what it is?
Not a clue. No. He just gave like pots, like fired stuff that's like, yeah.
Oh, is it painted?
Yeah.
So it's a finished product.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm just laughing. I'm like, oh, my dad's like on the pathway to your dad. Like it's yeah. the same character arc.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. But I started off just kind of working there. I'd help pour. Pouring is the, you pour, it's called liquid clay. It's called slip. You pour okay. it into a mold. The mold sets. You take it out. It's called greenware. It's this gray shape of whatever the mold is.
Okay.
You let that sit for a while. It gets hard and you fire it again. And then that turns into bisque, which is the whiteware you put on the shelves. And then gotcha, you know, customers okay. come in, pick out bisque, they paint it, and then that gets fired again into the shiny stuff you see.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think my dad's doing like the wheel stuff where you spin it and
so he's throwing.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. dope. It's you want to know what? It's so much harder than it ever would ever look like. The first time I ever tried to throw, it was a fucking disaster. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make a big fucking like 6 foot pot. Yeah. And I couldn't get the clay centered. And like, I couldn't like wrap my hands around it because it was all like lumpy and like fucking flying everywhere. And
yep.
Yeah. It was a mess.
Hell yeah. So your parents' pottery store, are you dealing with customers or are you just kind of helping like in the behind the scenes?
So I was pretty much helping with everything. I was behind the scenes. I was, you know, customer service. I was packing orders. I was shipping orders for them. I was teaching, you know, throwing classes. I was pretty much, you know, I had my hand in
yeah,
it all.
So. That's a perfect tutorial for opening your own business as an adult. Yeah, you got to try a little piece of everything.
Yeah, truthfully.
That's brilliant. Okay, and then when does the sneaker selling start? Like, I found in one of the articles talked about selling in high school. I think you mentioned it earlier, which is, yeah, when are you in fifth grade starting to, like, sell flip pieces of bubblegum
in
recess?
No. You want to know what? I don't know when I truly started to get my eyes for sneakers and streetwear. I think.
Was your sales before that? Like, were you in like Pokemon cards before that? And then that
oh, I've always been
into
you name it, like Legos, Bionicles, like Pokemon cards, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, Magic cards. I've always been into like collecting shit. Mm-hmm. I love stuff.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I used to collect like all like the band t-shirts. Like if Hot Topic had like a Whitechapel shirt, like I had to get it. And I'd have like my stack of Whitechapel shirts and
yep.
Chelsea Grin shirts
yep.
Thyroid is Murder shirts.
I had the biggest stack of alt press magazines.
Oh, there you go. Those yeah. too. I just, again, I love to collect shit. Like when Nintendo, yeah. Came out with the Smash for Wii U. They released mm-hmm. these things called Amiibo, and they're little NFC figurines. Mm-hmm. And I had to get everyone, so I'd go and wait, you know, an hour before Target would open,
gotcha.
In the fucking freezing cold, to pick up Rosalina and Luma Amiibo.
That rules. So your whole life you've been collecting.
I love stuff.
That's always the root of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, just collecting your whole life.
Yeah.
And then when does it become like a, yeah, I heard, this is a shitty person to reference, I heard Franz from Attila in an interview years prior, I think before he got more controversial maybe,
okay.
Was talking about how he used to like flip and sell bubble gum in elementary school. And it was like, fuck, yeah, pro or con, love him or hate him, whatever, like I think his business trajectory has been interesting of like the band and the label and the clothing line, like again, hits and misses in there. I don't want to say it's all great, but like
yeah.
the idea of that guy selling gum in fifth grade.
I feel like having that mindset at an early age is
yeah.
like a fucking incredible thing. And not yeah. many people have that, and people who have it like don't understand how special it is.
Yes. Were yeah. you selling bubblegum in fifth grade as well?
No, I wasn't. Okay. I was probably the kid getting scammed from bubblegum, to be honest. No, I wouldn't say that like I had any kind of, like interest in like business until I'd say maybe like the end of high school. And at that point, I'd already been like buying and flipping shoes. And
so at this point, it was just a way for you to get more of your own shoes. I assume you realized like if I could sell a couple pairs of shoes, then I could buy one
exactly.
for me.
You and make like 50-50-50-50, you know, it's $200. And I go, oh, shit, I could buy this fucking pair of shoes for myself. Or you could put it into the next thing. So you could take that 200 and buy something for yourself, or you could put it into the next thing and keep making more money. Mm-hmm. And that's, I feel like, how, you know, me selling shoes really snowballed.
Yep.
And just having, you know, discipline with selling shoes, I was able to, you know, make this. You know, 200 turns into 400, 400 turns into 1,000. And before you know it, you have like 50, 60,000 saved. And, you know, we ended up using that money for the business.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, a lot of my personal stuff too.
Is this like, you meant, I think one of the articles I said you described coming home with like 10 pairs of shoes some days and your family being like, yo, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Are there any high watermarks where like you came home from 12th like, grade and thought you like made all the money ever and just, yeah, became Jeff Bezos kind
of
thing?
So, I mean, I feel like if you ask any reseller, they'll say like Facebook Marketplace and OfferUp is, it's such like a cool thing and it's such a scary thing.
Yeah.
It's like, as I was younger, I'd have to learn how to authenticate shoes and you look back at the pictures, you're like, okay, does this fucking look right? Like I think $120 for a $400 shoe does not seem right. It's like too good to be true.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are steals out there. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Checking the stitching, checking the fonts and all the strokes, making sure that it's thick enough and thin enough. And, I lost my train of thought.
I'm going to talk about fakes for 1 second. I'm so off topic,
okay.
But I'm so sneaker ignorant that it feels like they should be able to make fakes that are like perfect replicas. Like I'm surprised how confident people are that they can determine fakes.
You'd think so. There's a lot of things that, go into authenticating and legit checking and all that kind of thing. It has to do with stitching, how far the stitching is, how consistent the stitching is. Again, when you look at like the size tag on the shoe, when you look at the size tag on the back of the tongue, there's a lot of different things and there's a lot of inconsistencies on real pairs too. So it's like, you really have to know. It's like, sometimes it's per release. Like this release will have like this, you know, this batch has this. And that's something that I did for a while is like, you try to keep up with all the things that are being improved on replicas to look out for, you know, what's new on the real thing. You know, so it's like, say, one that it stumped me when I was younger. I say younger, but this was only a couple years ago. So Yeezy 350 V1 Oxford Tans, that was like one of the first shoes that I got played on. I ended up getting a fake.
Okay.
And no clue they were fake.
Please, I'd love to hear the whole thing.
Again, this is like my steps to learning how to authenticate.
Yeah.
And there was this kid I knew at the time, and I was wearing them, and he goes, hey, your Yeezys are fake. I'm like, fuck you, they're fake. Like, suck it. Like, what do you fucking know?
Yeah.
He's like, they're fake. Trust me. I'm like, how do you know? He's like, because I know. And that put it into my head, like, how the fuck do you know my shoes are fake? Who are you to tell me? Sure enough, I looked it up. I looked at an authentication guide on, you know, the Oxford Tan, and I find out that this stitching is supposed to be black and that this is supposed to have like 6 or 7 dots as opposed to mine that has like 10. And it's just like the pattern is wrong and it's supposed to curve into the left on the, you know, stitching along the toe box. And it's just, there's so many little things you would never, ever think about if you're just a casual person who wants a pair of Yeezys or say Jordans or whatever. There's so many things that are faked and there's so many things that are... It's wild. It's wild.
I like buying soccer jerseys, and my issue is soccer jerseys are so expensive. It's like, I'm not paying $100 for what I value as a t-shirt. Like, I understand that it is a nice thing, but to me, it's like, I want a $20 t-shirt. I don't want a $120 luxury item for this thing. So what I sometimes do is I buy like, inauthentic replicas that are marked down, and I think that they're literally produced in the same factory, and that someone just takes 10 of the 100 that are produced home and sells these 10, and they are then real, but they're not authenticated through the final processes.
That's like another thing.
Does this exist in shoes where, making only 100 of this Jordan, it's like someone in the factory may take home 2 of those. And if you can just, fudge the books, like now there are 2 that are unaccounted for, but are real, but not maybe totally real.
So believe me, that kind of thing happens. That's how samples get out into the public. So say Nike factory or Adidas factory in, you know, China or Germany, Bangladesh, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up being there are shoes that have, you know, sample paperwork and sample tags and sample like size tags. All that stuff comes out and those are real. There are people that are, you know, hazy on them being like an official shoe. But there are also factories that are, say, across from Nike factory or down the street from Nike factory or around the block from Nike factory. you know, that produce the same kind of shit, and they have, you know, Nike factory right there to like spy on them and like steal mm-hmm. shit. Yeah. So that kind of thing does happen where it's like authentic materials like do get out into the public. As far as my knowledge goes on that, I'm a little hazy on it. I don't mm-hmm. want to say something that's not true and, sure. you know, whatever. Sure. But stories I've heard and, you know, things that I've been told by very reputable people, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's very crazy. It's wild.
Anything with that much money and is going to have, yeah, someone yeah, trying to get
about,
ahead in the world.
Think about a
yeah.
shoe that costs $30. Somebody's copying that and selling it for like under what, you know, Nike's retail would be. So say mm-hmm. like 90, 100 bucks for a mm-hmm. shoe that resells for 1,000, 5,000, 10,000. Mm-hmm. So I can't even tell you how many people try to bring in replicas to the store.
It's got to be so embarrassing if
yeah,
you don't know.
Yeah.
yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, again, a lot of people do know. People think that we don't know our shit, which yeah. is pretty crazy. Not to, you know, toot our own horns. Impossible Kicks has become the biggest brick and mortar sneaker company in the world. To my knowledge, yeah. there's no other company with 20 locations, which is crazy because I don't know. It's just fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
But it's not just me now. There's so many people on our team. Again, we have, you know, over 100 employees who help and, you know, make the ship run.
Is identifying fakes more of like a science or like an art? Like, is it something that you can just like, is it, are there basic guidelines or is it like, is your eye so trained that, yeah, it's now superior to what my eye could do?
So you want to know what? I kind of brought it up earlier. There are like batches of replicas and it's crazy because there are like, oh, my nose is running a little bit.
RIP.
Sorry, everybody. My allergies aren't the best, so I get post-nasal drip. Don't make fun of me. but yeah, there are batches of replicas, and say like this factory will work on making this replica better and better and better and better. But there will always be like that one little flaw mm-hmm. that like is just, you know, so foreign to the authentic pair.
Yeah.
And again, sometimes it's the length of the tongue. Sometimes it's the way the shoe is stitched. Sometimes it's the color of the stitching. Sometimes it's the way how the tongue sits on the like the side of the shoe.
It's
sometimes
unbelievable. The
there's
detail,
so many
yeah.
little things that it's just like, okay, I could spot that right away. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'll see somebody on the street and people are like, you can never tell a replica if somebody's wearing an off-foot. Yes, you can. You so can. And there are, you know, again, there are prestiges of replicas and you have your replicas that are fucking amazing. And then you have sure. to look out for your little things and your replicas that are dog shit,
yep.
you know, and you could just immediately pick it apart. But for your yeah. replicas that are really good, there's going to be a couple key things that you look for yeah. and you're able to, okay, you know, this is a replica, whether it be on the box or the actual shoe. A lot of the time, if I buy, I never buy without a box. A, because it's fucking suspect. B, because it's why am I going to, you know, sell to a customer, offer a luxury experience and sell a shoe to a customer with no box? It doesn't yeah. make any sense.
Yeah.
And again, that was kind of one thing that we wanted to really appeal to is, you know, higher end customers and offering more of a luxury experience when we first opened. I didn't want to mm-hmm. be just like your average mom and pop sneaker store, although that's what we thought it was going to be. I feel like from the get-go, we kind of had an idea of what we wanted. We just didn't think we'd get there in 3.5 years.
Yeah.
We didn't think we'd be where we were.
I want to wrap up the story of getting scammed on, I'm forgetting the name, it was Desert Tan.
Oxford Tan.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I was in the ballpark for my idiot brain. You get scammed, the kid points it out. Is that like, yeah, does that light the fire? You're like, I'm never getting scammed again.
Yeah. yeah. And that made me think like, fuck you. You made money on me. Like, yeah. and you scammed me.
yep.
You know, it's like, so that kind of put it into my head. Like, I'm just going to get good at authenticating and I'm going to take this reselling shit like serious now.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, I mean, again, I sold shoes to my friends. I sold shoes online. And again, before you know it, a couple hundred bucks turned into a couple thousand bucks. A couple mm-hmm. thousand bucks turned into enough money to start a fucking store. And so, yeah, like I was saying, on Christmas Eve, John goes, came over, you know, share gifts, whatever. And he kind of pulls me to the side. He goes, hey, remember how we had that sneaker concept and you mm-hmm. wanted to, like, do a store? He goes, let's do it. And, you know, with my product knowledge, authenticating and, you know, just I guess knowing what's up at that time
yep.
and his business background, we just kind of teamed together, opened the first store at West Farms Mall.
Which is...
And,
sorry to totally interrupt.
No, you're good.
It's an insane time to open a first store. So my first year being fully self-employed is 2020. So
yeah.
January 2020 is when I'm like, I'm going to do this. And then of course, March rolls around and it's like, fuck, maybe I'm not going to do this. So for you guys that 9 months into that process to be, yeah, at that point, we are fully in the midst of a global pandemic. There's no one who can deny that. And for you guys to go, this is the time. Like,
well, we figure if not now, then when?
Okay.
I feel like subconsciously I saw that, cars were going up in value. Mm-hmm. Trading cards were going up in value. Any sort of collectible things were just going up in value. So
sure.
it's like sneakers are also going up in value. And we have this idea to create a fucking business around it. Let's go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when we offered, used sneakers as well. So we were doing new, we were doing used. And we were doing clothing. We still do clothing. What I'm trying to say is there was just, I feel like people thought that there just wasn't money around in 2020. And there was just opening day, I think we did like 70,000 or something like that.
I saw you said that the line was the biggest it's been since the iPhone 4S was a line from West Farm
or
something.
Not from my mouth. I think it's from one of the company's employees.
But still,
West Farm's employees.
The comparison there is impressive to me, of like the amount of PlayStations that have come out and Xboxes and like Switches, that like the amount of things that have come out in that time.
Yeah,
it didn't get that reaction.
I think we just kind of shocked the culture at the perfect time, because I think everybody was just so like tuned in on buying shit online, and there wasn't a sneaker store that really catered to, you know, like bigger sneakerheads or people into fashion the way we wanted to. And again, I feel like we just kind of showed everybody what's up at the right time, right place, right time.
Yeah, it's brilliant the way it worked out. And then December, so Christmas is when we want to open the first store. How quickly then is the first store open? Because based on this timeline, it would seem then like within a month.
So from what I remember, we were told that we were the fastest from concept to opening in West Farm's history, which is crazy.
Okay.
So we had an idea, said, okay, here's our floor plan. Mm-hmm. Floor plan gets accepted. You know, we do all of our background stuff, and we open. Our soft opening was on January 31st. We opened on that following day, the 1st of February.
That's so fast. That's, a month then. And I think the other, I think it's a testament to like your personality of like most kids that age couldn't have $60,000 and not fuck up their whole life.
I think
as we're talking about like the shoe trading, it's like, it's the same formula kids would use for drugs, right? You buy a little bit of drugs so you could sell some and have some money for yourself. And like people get into so much trouble with that formula. And I think it's a real testament to your character that like you were able to, play with that fire and not go gamble that money, not go spend it on your dream car. And it's like, that down payment can go real fast, even though it seems like an insane amount of money to me.
Right.
I'm sure it can disappear.
Definitely is. Yeah. Definitely is. We took that money, opened up Hartford, and literally after the first day, we panicked because we had all this fucking product, like, and more ready for the first day, ready to rock. And, we looked at the shelves after we closed and we're like, oh my fucking God, what are we going to do? Tomorrow's another day. There's going to be another line and we have no product. So we had to like rush and like have meetings with people and like, hey, like we need to buy this. We had to rush around and like buy all new inventory for the second day and like just make sure that we were in the morning going to meet people at 6 a.m. going to buy more fucking sneakers.
How do you source that fast? It feels like there's such a luxury product that the market, you'd have to ship them in from places. Like it seems almost impossible that you can get all your hands on.
Right. I feel like we had a lot of people that we met the first day. A lot of my friends, handful of John's friends, friends of friends, like, hey, like my friend has X amount of pairs, like you want to check them out? And his friend will introduce him or introduce us to his friends, and it's like the chain of people who resell. And you get familiar with all the local sellers and you realize, okay, like this guy buys from this guy. Okay, well, who the fuck do you buy from? This guy buys from this guy. And you think, oh my God, this guy has a fucking big dick if he's moving 1,000 pairs a week. You realize this guy buys from this guy. It gets bigger.
You just
and
go
bigger,
up the food chain.
And bigger and bigger.
I think I'm also probably underestimating how many people have hundreds of shoes in their apartment, where to me it's like I have 3 pairs of shoes. Like if you came to me to buy a pair of shoes, it'd be like, yo, I'm sorry. Like Goodwill's a better option than coming to me. But I probably underestimated the troves that some people have of just independent sellers who have just collected one kind of thing for so long and made it happen. Damn. And so the first day is all your personal inventory. Day two, you go out and source it, but I assume it starts to like stabilize after that.
So first day, it was stuff that we bought in preparation for the opening, as well as some of my personal stuff.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So some mix of the two, day two, and then by day three, we're starting to regulate and it kind of takes on a more normal
three, it was still jamming. Like the whole first month, it was just like word of mouth. Like everything spread like fire. It's just like sales were amazing. Like everybody just couldn't wait to see the store.
Yeah.
We had so many repeat customers, and it was truly like, I will never forget the beginning of the company. It was just so exciting and scary, and just, we didn't know what the fuck we were doing, you know?
Yeah.
Like we had the slightest clue. I feel like after seeing just the foot traffic through the door after the first couple of days, I feel like after the first like 2 weeks, we both subconsciously thought, okay, well, what's next? If we have this one and this one is doing this well, can we duplicate the blueprint and can we fucking have 2 6 stores? So I think March or April, Jersey happens. So you open Short Hills Mall, Jersey, another incredible opening, another very successful opening. And then after Jersey, we figure why not go down south? So we go from Connecticut to Jersey to Florida. Mm-hmm. We do international outlets in Orlando. And we have three under our belt at this point, and we figure, well, why not a fourth? So we do Mall of Millennia, and then we do Tampa, and then we do West Palm. And then we ended up with six in Florida. Then we went out to California, and we opened in Denver, Colorado, and we opened in New York. And then there's just, we have 20 now. And the ball started to get so big, and we started hiring so many new people. And, our workload got to be huge. And
What does your workload look like? Is it like... what does it mean to open a store? What in your workload is this? Is it just scouting, like storefronts?
So when you think about it, technically, yes, that's definitely a part of it. I mean, looking for new locations and having new locations pitched from, so-and-so, it's a big part of it. Making sure that you're opening in the right spot is big. I mean, we try to open in, major cities. We're not going to open up in fucking Middletown under a fucking bridge or something,
Right,
We just want to open in, premier malls with beautiful foot traffic. And we kind of tend to, Simon and Taubman properties with, Forbes.
Okay.
Those kinds of properties. And we're open in, so many more now, too. But we just kind of look for key cities. So we have Hartford,
Miami seemed like the obvious one.
Hartford, Miami. Yeah. You have Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. You have Austin. You have Denver, Charlotte. Just try to really hit the nail on the head as far as all the major cities go.
Yep. And so your background is touring. It's music, and you've done some like personal selling. But as this thing takes off, then it feels like there'd be a lot more attention on you, a lot of people in your ear that would be really uncomfortable. And like at times I start to feel this like, this thing gets bigger than me all of a sudden. And there are moments of like, why are they talking to me? And like, there are so many people asking for favors that it starts to be like, who am I? Like, was there a weird like growing pain in here where like it is all great and it is all stuff we would have hoped happened and everyone would wish to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But in that process of that growth, I assume there were, just a lot of people coming out of the woodwork saying, hey, Wayne, you're doing great. Can you blah, blah, blah for me?
Yeah, and that it was would a, lot have been of, a lot of kids from my high school and a lot of just like people in my life who not necessarily didn't want anything to do to me. Not necessarily didn't want anything to do with me.
Yeah.
But like we weren't tight.
Yeah.
We weren't homies. Yeah. Like I wouldn't dap you up if I saw you in fucking Target.
Yeah.
Like
6 months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I feel like people see that you've achieved, I don't know, something cool or like have some kind of status. I don't believe I have any kind of status because I'm just a fucking guy.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think people see like social media and they're like, oh my God, this is so fucking cool. Like, let me see if I can get free shoes from this kid that I happen to know. Like, happen to loosely know because like I had science class with him or something like that. And it doesn't, only go there. There are other people in my life who are, who have hit me up and be like, yo, like free shoes. Like, yo, can you please hook it up with free shoes? I'm like, you need to get out of my fucking messages. Dude,
I feel like you're kind of like a private person. Like you're not the person to like to come to where it's like, you're very friendly and approachable, like in person, but you're not someone whose like whole life is on the internet. You're not someone who's like all out there where, seems like it's like all this attention would be like the thing you don't want.
I'm decently selective on what I choose to put on the internet. I share the things that I think are, comfortable and appropriate.
Yeah.
And there are so many other things and insane photos of me on tour that I don't put on the internet.
Yep.
It was a little hard to deal with at first, and it's just a part of it. It's just so whatever to me. I don't really care.
Sure. Did you have to put on a suit at all during this?
I have. Yeah. You want to know what? To be honest, when I was a car salesman, I loved dressing up. I love dressing up in a suit.
Hell yes. Okay. Yeah. Getting spiffy is part of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking beast mode. Yeah.
Beast mode with Jordans on though.
Hell
still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
That was actually one thing. I had Oxford tans and I put Oxford tans on with my suit. I wore the fake Oxford tans.
Like, hell yes.
I don't know when they're fake. But yeah.
What were some of the high watermarks? I know we've had like cool celebrity clients come through. We've had all the stores opening, like all the different successes, different watermarks. I'm sure there's different milestones of sales goals we've hit at each store. Or
for sure.
It was $110,000 sale that one of them made on some crazy pair of shoes.
Yeah, like, so we sold like a Jordan 1, like what, the Dornbecker or something like that. And it was like a $90,000 shoe, $90,000 sale.
Yeah, mind-numbing money too. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's like, who the fuck has 90 grand to spend on a shoe? A shoe, not a car, a shoe.
I would hate to know how much their car
the
costs.
The amount of people that own like on-screen Star Wars props and like all the sports memorabilia and like all this stuff that's like essentially priceless. It's like a lot of these, people with like fuck you money like don't care, and it's just it's cool that, you know, somebody wanted to grab that from Impossible.
Yeah,
because it makes me feel good. Yeah, it's like, hey, like thank you for the trust. It's like you spent $100,000 of your own money at my store because you trust us, and it's a cool feeling.
I like the luxury aspect of this, and I'm curious of like where you think your luxury like taste comes from, because I was looking at myself of like, yeah, I don't have it. I feel like I'm very, very basic in a lot of, yeah, the things I choose to buy. Like, I'm very happy to shop at H&M. Like, I don't need anything same. More than that.
These jeans are H&M. I'm wearing Doc Martens. I'm wearing an Earth Crisis t-shirt. Which is so different. For $40 on Depop.
The Supreme
shirt. Like 2001 or something. Yeah.
I was wondering, I was like, where does this go in me? And I remember I had this flashback to my dad. My dad, at some point, I become like the same height as him so he can have my hand-me-downs and clothes.
Yeah.
And he gets hand-me-down shoes for me, and they were Nike shoes. And he takes like stitch removers and like removes the swoosh off the side. Because he's like, I don't want to represent Nike.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I need shoes. This is what it is. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's where it came from me. Like, where did you get the opposite of that? Of like, yeah, put more Nike on there. Get the cooler thing.
You want to know what, man? I don't know, because I feel like I'm really not that much of a materialistic person. Like, I don't care. Like, my room is like pretty minimal. I have like my bed. Mm-hmm. I have my t-shirts folded nice. I have like my computer with like my nice setup. And I don't know. I like cologne and perfume a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I have like a couple other little knickknacks. I don't collect shit like how I used to when I was a kid. I kind of gave that up and moved on.
Are there still like little Dark Horse collections that you keep going? Like, I feel like you're never going to fully get rid of that.
I have a couple Yu-Gi-Oh! Pop figures.
Hell yes.
Okay. That's really it. I don't have any more Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards or Pokemon cards or anything like that. I sold a lot of my collection.
Got all of them. Is there one from the collection that is your favorite? Like, what's the high watermark of your collecting? Is there something that you've gotten to buy or work with in your time that's like, thank God I got to spend time with this thing?
Yeah, when it came down to like Pokemon cards, like when I was like buying and selling Pokemon cards, there were so many cards like I wish that I'd had when I was a kid. And I collected graded cards for a while. Mm-hmm. So to have like, you know, like your younger self's grail, like I had a Mewtwo Gold Star PSA 10. And it's really fucking expensive card, like thousands of dollars.
Yes.
And that was a really cool card to have. I had a Lugia EX PSA 10. I can go on and on and on about Pokemon for anybody that knows what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But to the average viewer, I'm just talking bullshit. But yeah, there are so many cool grails. I had a Charizard from base set signed by Mitsuhiro Arita, which is the original illustrator of that artwork.
That's so
and
sick.
And he's done a lot of the Pokemon illustrations from back in the day. He still illustrates today. But again, this is extraneous. Nobody gives a shit.
When is it time to sell your grails? I guess, because these are all in the past tense is the interesting part of this to me. Yeah. I was waiting for you to be like, and there's this one that I will never part ways with.
No, I've sold everything. I go through that too. Whether it be Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon or collectibles, I buy everything, complete the whole fucking set, and then I get bored and I sell it.
Gotcha.
That's like a weird, weird characteristic of mine.
Interesting.
I love it all until I have it all, and then I don't want it anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So then what is the, if the business is the one iteration of that, what is the next step of this? Is there like a version where like Pokemon cards and Impossible Kick start to meet? Like, is there a
possibly
other alternative?
The future is so bright and so beautiful. I have no clue what's next. I have a couple ideas that I won't mention.
Fair enough.
But man, there's so much in my head. There are so many things that I'd like to try and consider. And I have a couple things that I'd like to help my parents with and, you know, do that. We been considering doing pottery stores down the coast, and again, there are so many different things that I'd love to try. Just because, you know, Impossible is 20 locations doesn't mean we're ending anytime soon as well. There's so much on our plate. There's so many things that we're invested in continuing and making more grandiose and fucking massive. You know, if you think we're big now, just wait, because we only have We're going up the hill like this.
It's
just
wild.
We just want to be at the top.
I think the other part of this that fascinates me is like you're succeeding in a brick and mortar format. I think I saw like 90% of your sales are often through brick and mortar. And I don't know if that's still the figure.
Yeah, we have an online platform as well as an app too,
which exists. But it seems like the brick and mortar is really what has done the most success for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And my curiosity there is, it seems like brick and mortar is on its decline. Like, no one in the last 5 or 10 years, to my knowledge, has been like, "Yo, get out of Amazon, go back to the malls. Like, make sure you open up Barnes and Noble again."
I know, and it's like scary to see. It's like you see like all these Sears clothes, you see these Ames clothes, you see these JCPenney's clothes, you see like even Border. Remember Borders bookstore? Like, you see Borders clothes.
They just opened one over here, I swear. Or like
Borders?
It might be Barnes and Noble
in the Townline Plaza.
Yes, that's exactly the one. Yes, I know, go to that big one all the time.
I can't wait to go and look, even though it looks really small from the outside, but I can't fucking wait to go
no
in
way
there.
Anyone buys a book there ever.
I'm gonna buy a book cookbook in there. Just to fucking spite you.
You might be the one sale they get.
I'll go buy like a cooking book and never use it or there some you shit. Go. Like, oh, in the closet or something.
But yeah, it seems like malls are on the decline, and you guys said, no, they're not. Look at this, bitch.
Yeah, check these sales out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. And I think to your point, you found like a real hole in the market where, yeah, StockX and all these other things online exist.
Yeah.
But no one does it in person. I saw you guys
talking. Well, you want to know what? You can't try a shoe on through the fucking phone. You can't try a shoe on through the internet. You don't know how the integrity of the sole feels. You don't know if it's prime knit or leather. It's like, yeah, you can look it all up. You can watch all the YouTube reviews. But it's like, until you get your fucking shoe in, until you get your foot in the shoe itself, you have no clue how it fits. And I feel like that's a big thing about in-person sneaker stores that will never leave. And same thing goes for clothing.
Yep.
It's like, do you really want to go through the hassle of like trying to return to a company that doesn't take returns, emailing them like, hey, please can I fucking return this shoe? And they give you like a middle finger emoji and that's the only, thing in the email. And you gotta say, please again. And you come into my store, I let you swap for whatever else. It's easy, it's painless, and that's it.
And there's like the CrossFit community thing also in the Impossible Kicks of like, you have to be around other sneakerheads instead of being in your room.
Exactly.
Trading stocks almost.
I feel like sneakerheads have like such an ego. They'll come in to be like, like, see, you got like a piece of shit pair of shoes on, and be like, my shoes are so much better. It's crazy. I think a lot of those kids have egos. It's funny though.
Yeah. Anyone who trades luxury goods has some ego, and that's why they chase the luxury good, right? That's kind of inherent to any pursuit. I guess I don't want to even like pigeonhole. It's not that they're weird. It's like, that's what I do with cameras. Like I walk into the photo pit and immediately go, ooh, why are you? What's that thing doing?
You come in, you want to wear like the best of the best shit and flex to everybody. Yeah, and you see somebody wearing like this and you're like, ugh, 100%, what the fuck are you wearing?
100%. And of course, it's a matter of values, right?
Not everyone needs sandals. Weak.
Yeah. Right. I'm curious though, because with like the car comparison here is valuable to me. Of like the second a car leaves the lot, we always hear that it depreciates.
Correct.
And with shoes, as you have these luxury shoes, I assume the second they're put on someone's feet, it affects it.
Again, there are levels of There are levels of luxuriousness within your shoes. Sure, you have shoes that are $200, and yes, the second you wear them, they're gonna fucking depreciate. Because they're $200. And you have a beautiful Lamborghini. I don't know cars for the life of me. I couldn't tell you trim level, whatever. Say a Lamborghini from, 2007. Say it's a collector's item. Say it was a little bit more limited of a run. Yes, like something like that will appreciate because it's limited. And the same thing with shoes. Shoes come out. They're popular. They're limited. And say a reel goes, viral of this certain shoe being worn by X person or say Travis Scott driving this fucking exclusive Lamborghini, whoever it may be. Travis Scott is just a crazy, crazy example because there are so many instances where he's worn this or X or Y and the market just skyrockets.
Yep.
And it's pretty much the same thing.
How do you manage that like in store though? So as people are trying on shoes, like if the shoe on the shelf, like permanently on the shelf, can that ever be sold? If you had a pair of Jordans on the shelves, and again, I'm an idiot to all things shoes, but they're a pair on the shelf that people are going in and trying on all day. Is that shoe in plastic? How are we like making sure that shoe doesn't also depreciate by being tried on?
So you want to know what? We sell the shoe as it's just the display shoe. Every shoe we have, the right sneakers on display for you to try on, because I never liked walking into a sneaker store and having it feel like a fucking museum. Like you couldn't touch anything. You couldn't be hands on. It's like, I want people to come in and I want you to try the shoe that you want. And that's the shoe that you get, So we do have shoes for shoes that are like, bestsellers, and for shoes that we move a lot of volume of. I have shoes in the back there where both shoes are in the box. So we just go back and grab them and here you go.
Sure.
But for pretty much everything that we have, everything is just out. And again, our inventory is just rotating so fast. It's like, things get tried on maybe once before they get sold, and usually it's the person fucking buying them.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I guess I worked at Journeys for a little bit, so I'm assuming people come in and try on the same pair of shoes.
Yeah,
all
I know.
Day.
Sweaty foot.
And it's like, I guess also Journeys is as far from a luxury experience as you're gonna get.
Yeah.
And it sounds like
I'm not gonna say anything, but
it's your competitor. Yeah, you can't. But as a former employee, I can speak to it. No, I think the other piece of that that's interesting is I saw in one of the articles that it's like the whole experience is catered, so people are not just coming and saying, "Here are these Jordans." It's how about this shirt, this sweatshirt that we go with? How
exactly. We do outfit making too. So say, hey, you have court purple Jordans. Hey, here's this purple antisocial shirt that would match perfect. Or hey, here's this purple Chrome Heart shirt that would match perfect. And you want to know what would go nice with that? We have a pair of purple jeans, not purple the brand, not actual purple color jeans. But we have a beautiful light wash denim, that has rips in it. And it would just look dope with the outfit.
Yeah.
So again, we make outfits for people too.
Was that
and stuff
part
like
of like your ideology at the beginning? Does that grow and develop as you start to do sales and some sales expertise come in? Or is this part of when you and your brother sit down? Is this part of the plan of like, yeah, we can include more things?
We could. So yeah, originally we only did clothing, and I thought it'd be cool to have like skate gear in the store. So it's like we carried like Fucking Awesome and Hookups and Death Wish, and we did stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really sell because we're not a fucking skate company. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So we branched more into Supreme and Palace. Yep. And, you know, Babe and Antisocial. And now we carry, you know, Chrome Hearts and Sinclair and Spider and Denim Tears and all these bigger companies that are, you know, pretty high end. And they fetch, you know, a high resale price too. So I feel like for people coming in who buy like an Antisocial shirt or a V-Lone shirt, like a Bape shirt, it's a lot different than the demographic that would come in and buy, you know, the more expensive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to offer like levels of, you know, clothing too. So you can get your shirt for $100, you can get your shirt for $1,500.
And it also, it begins to become an experience instead of just a destination that people come to.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I feel like there's really not a lot of places that sell Chrome Hearts. Chrome Hearts is really exclusive. Occasionally they'll do like, you know, one or two items that you can go on the website, but they always sell out quick. You have to like book a reservation for one of the in-store locations. And sometimes it's up to like a week before you get in. And again, that's an experience, you know, within itself, is to be able to go into a Chrome Hearts. And I feel like that excitement is something I wanted to like capture. So putting all, you know, the higher end sneakers and, you know, the higher end clothing, I really wanted to, again, create that experience where it's like, holy shit, like this store has this stuff. Like, this is awesome, you know?
And you're starting to get like the celebrity appeal, I think, is the other fun part of this. Of like, yeah, you've gotten to meet a lot of fun people along the way. Like, is there anything that stands out there as a high watermark? As someone you, real proud to meet someone with real character when you cross paths with them?
Oh, man. We've met so many people. I say we just because there are so many celebrities that, you know, go into so many different locations. Hartford sees like a handful, but like all the managers in Florida.
There's not celebrities in
California.
Hartford?
Oh, yeah. Waka Flocka was in the store like a month ago. Okay. He walked in I was looking at my employee. I was like, fucking Waka Flocka. And
that's funny that he walked in. I saw the picture. And I assumed it would be like a planned thing.
Yeah. I think he was doing like a free show at one of the colleges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He walked in with like one of his homies, and to be honest, his homie looked familiar. So I greeted them nice. I was like, "What's up, guys? Welcome in. How you doing?" I was like, "You're just fucking Waka Flocka." I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
But a customer stopped him right away and was like, "Can I get a fucking picture with you?" And I'm like, "Here we go. Like, this guy just wants to shop." And I was like, "If you want, I'll take it in front of the sneaker wall." Waka's like, "I'm good on that. Just get the picture." I'm like, "Okay, I'll just get the picture." But he picked out a couple things. I think it was for like him and his girlfriend, and he was on his way.
That rules.
Maybe we chopped it up for like a second. I didn't want to bug him too much, but that was cool. That's probably the biggest celebrity that's come through Hartford. Actually, local celebrity, Dame Drops, dude who does food reviews, and Badlands Chugs. Again, two big YouTube guys, mm-hmm. both really, really nice and really genuine people, especially Dame. Yeah, Dame has been supporting and hanging out, and he did some advertisement for us since day one.
It rules.
Yeah, again, super, super nice, genuine guy.
It seems like this has been like a really like complete process for you. I think as I sat down for this, I was going to hear you talk about business and the growth of the thing. And it's like, no, it's been a really like good experience for Wayne of like traveling and meeting people and learning. And yeah, I'm sure we talked about the high school ripoff. I'm sure that there has been some instance that I won't pry you about. But as the business grows, I'm sure there were some ups and downs that it's like, yeah, you've had a real good like life tutorial here. And it seems like you're poised to do whatever you want next. It seems like the world is open to be like, okay, Wayne, what do you want to do with your time now?
Right.
And it seems, I'm sure that's a big problem to solve, but a great luxury to have also.
Yeah.
To be in the driver's seat there and kind of able to, play with your own fate a little bit.
I guess so.
Write your own book. Write your own story.
Yeah, hey, I probably could at this point. So much shit has happened.
I'm sure. Yeah, we'll hear about some of it in 20 years when it's not topical or timely anymore.
Yeah, I know, right?
But hell yes, dude. Anything outside of work? I like to try and wrap these things up with like, we talked so much about work and all the things that are happening in the store, but like, is there anything outside of this or any other hobbies we talked about, like collecting cards or I guess Smash maybe is the one here. Like, what else are you doing in your free time? What else makes you happy outside of, making your business grow?
I do play Super Smash Brothers.
Okay.
I play Melee online.
Hell yeah.
It's through a variation of Dolphin, which is a GameCube emulator that somebody modified. It's called Slippy. And it's essentially like online matchmaking. It's like Netplay, or it's like just playing a game online. But it was created especially for Melee.
That's so
sick. And the game is it was released in 2001, so it's 23 years old.
And are you competing in this?
I play it more casually. It's played very competitively, but it's definitely a big hobby of mine. It's something that I've put a lot of time into, and I still suck. But it's a big part of my life. I'll always love Smash, and I play it like it's my religion.
Is that that's the big thing outside of work?
Yeah, I do that, and I've been doing music on and off, I feel like, as you know, for the last like 15 years.
Yes,
and, I finally started to make music again with a close homie of mine, and got a couple cool songs that we wrote, and hopefully it'll be released by like midsummer.
That is very exciting. Is there anything, nothing's quite out yet. I think I saw the band name is Vanity Haze. I saw in the bio. So it is, the account is set up. We're ready to roll out.
Yeah.
Is that
30 followers.
Is that in the works, or is that like, is that done and ready to roll out, or is that still being recorded now? And like,
So we recorded everything. It's just in the middle of being, you know, mixed and
all the other fun stuff,
all that jazz.
Hell yes. You've done, Grip of Misfortune also exists. The other bands in the,
I've been in like various hardcore bands like throughout the years. I don't even want to say names, 'cause I don't want anybody to look up and be like, oh, it's pretty fucking sucks. Like, I was in Grip of Misfortune. It was like a, I don't even know, like
one.
Hardcore
something or other.
That was like a deathcore band, I'd say.
Beat down. Whatever. I'm so bad with genres, dude. I
started like a little project. It was called Head Split.
Okay.
That was like straight edge, like Hell beat yes. down. It was pretty Hell cool.
Yes. Where does Vanity Haze fit into this?
So it's, you like Deftones?
Yeah.
You like Glassjaw?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's like Deftones and Glassjaw. I kind of had a kid.
Sick.
And throw in like a little pinch of like, heard of the band Loathe?
I love
like a little pinch of the band Loathe. And,
I know Loathe a lot more than Deftones, which I think is not something that most people would support. Okay. But that's where my priorities lie.
Yeah, I'd say we're like the child of those three bands.
Hell yes. That's exciting. Any hope for playing shows? I hope to be an internet project. What's your perfect?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have any members except just it's me and a friend of mine named Paul.
Okay.
And I think we've been trying to write music for forever. We were in an old hardcore band called Knockout together.
We're starting to get some band names all out right, of you. We're starting to get some Google searches.
It was the shittiest band of all time. I wanted it to be a straight edge band so bad, and there was always one person in the band who just wasn't a straight edge. It was just fine.
How it be sometimes, but we're getting there. We finally have a straight edge band cooking.
No, it's just, it's not straight. Maybe it'll be straight edge. I don't fucking know. But it's just going to be fun. We're going to play shows for fun. I don't think we have any real expectations of it other than just to write music and fucking have fun.
And you're doing vocals in that?
Yeah.
Hell yes. That's a exciting one. I'm excited to see you back out there and start to do this again.
Yeah, man. It's dope.
Start to rip it and make it happen again. My last little thing that I wanted to ask that I forgot to ask sooner is, what is like your current involvement in Impossible Kicks now? So like, what is a day of tasks? Are
I used to travel a lot. Mm-hmm. I kind of took a step back, and I'm pretty hands off with that now. Occasionally, I'll fly out to like a store's grand opening and, you know, kind of help out with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have an apartment in Florida, so I'm back and forth between here and Florida.
Hell yes.
And my involvement with the company, I've decided to keep a lot more on the minimal side, just because all my friends, all my family are in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And I kind of came to the conclusion that I didn't want to leave my friends and family too much. Again, that's an incredible luxury that I am very fortunate to have. But I'll usually go and work out of the Hartford location. Mm-hmm. I'll just do like, you know, a 9 to 5, and it's pretty much my work day.
Does that
I'll help with things that, you know, my brother will ask me about, and like, hey, can you fucking do this for me? I'm like, yeah, sure.
So. Does the wanting to be home, and again, feel free not to overshare too much here, but I assume that implies that there was 3 months in Florida where you were there almost full time, and it was like, this is cool, but not quite for me. And so I was then motivated to come home.
Yeah. So it's like, whenever there'd be like a hiccup in like a store, or it's like a change of, you know, manager, I would go and retrain, and I'd do this and I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned into like almost like every other week I was flying to like North Carolina, and I was flying to Denver, and I was flying back home, and then the next week I was flying back to Denver, and I was just like, I don't want to do this much fucking traveling.
Yeah.
But
it's exhausting. You know,
I did it, and I continued to help all the stores, and I will always help the stores, because all I want to do is just see them grow.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime there's any kind of issue, and you know, I'll always be the first person.
Part of being a founder.
Of course.
Yep.
Of course.
Hell yes, my man. Mission accomplished. We did it. Normally I tell people, put up your social medias and tell them where to check you out, but I think they probably know where to go find you right now. Go to West Park.
Just at Impossible Kicks on Instagram. We have Impossible Kicks the app, Impossible Kicks the website, and if you give a fuck enough to follow me, my Instagram is just not Wayne McCadlow.
Hell yes. Vanity Haze, check out the band. We got big things coming soon. Big things coming soon all over the place. For me, t-shirts for sale for a couple more days. Music videos are happening. Book music videos, I guess, if you're listening and interested. and have a beautiful life. We'll talk to you soon. Yeah. Wayne, thanks for coming through, my man.
Yeah.
And we will
eight.
Catch you next time.
Eight.
Okay, technically it is rolling again. Okay, so the second we stopped, I had a question that I asked Wayne about, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to ask it on air, and we decided that maybe I will. So the question that I had written down is like, so obviously Yeezy's been a controversial brand in the last couple of years, and it seems like now that the controversy is no longer affiliated with the brand, or the most controversial person is not affiliated with the brand. Is that brand like still as valuable as it was? Like, where's your projection for this thing?
So you want to know what? Adidas as a whole, I feel like, has had such a decline in popularity and sales. They're still, you know, putting Yeezys out with Kanye's name on them. But that's going to come to an end real soon. I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to put Yeezys out with only Adidas branding on them. No more Kanye, no more Yeezy, no more YZY, no more anything. I think they're going to continue to sell those silhouettes until then.
Interesting. Can you sell, like, as someone who sells shoes, as someone who loves shoes, like, can you still sell that brand? And like, it seems like if we take Jordan out of Jordan, like, I guess people still love the silhouettes. Like, I'm not the person who is in that thing, but like, it seems like if Jordan fell off of the mountain,
they will sell regardless. I feel like you'll lose your core demographic. I feel like when Kanye was like incredibly hands-on, he was wearing all the new colorways, I feel like there was just such an excitement. And, you know, as it started to like decline and like drop off and like all this controversy started to happen, you know, a lot of people like, you know, lost touch with the brand itself.
Yeah.
A lot of people lost touch with Yeezy. And I feel like we've been just waiting for something more exciting, because I feel like ever since, you know, Adidas stopped with the releases, we've been missing something in sneakers. And I feel like it's cool seeing all these Dunks come out, seeing the collabs come out, seeing the Jordans come out, seeing the new Asics and New Balance come out. But it's like, where is Yeezy, or where is the next thing? And I feel like with the introduction of Yeezy Pods, I don't know if you've seen those, engineered by Balenciaga.
Okay.
They're very similar to like the Balenciaga Speed Trainer. I don't know if you've seen those, but the people call them the sock shoe.
Yes.
Yeah. I think Balmain has a lot of designer companies have an equivalent to like the sock shoe. I've had a couple of them. I've had Balenciaga Speed Trainers and they're amazing. I ordered Yeezy Pods to kind of get my, you know, foot in the door about them, because I've heard, you know, mixed things. I fucking hate them. I fucking love them. They're incredible. I think they have potential to be huge. And especially at the price point they're at, $20, I'm waiting to see a Yeezy resurgence. I'm waiting to see Yeezy bounce back. But if that doesn't happen, I feel like there's something cool around the corner. There's always the next thing.
What does this do for like the stock of Yeezys that I assume you guys have, where I assume that there is a bunch of shoes now that have been, I don't know if sales have dropped off or like gone away, but I assume they dropped off for a little bit. And then we assume that we just wait for the curve to come back up and those will sell again.
Believe it or not, there are colorways that have remained stagnant. There are colorways that have dropped value because they've been restocked on Adidas's end. And then there are also colorways that have like shot up in value. So it's like a lot of the reflective colorways have gone up. So they would do a reflective colorway and a non-reflective variant. And a lot of the reflective ones have gone up. I think just when somebody comes in to sell, like, I'll check the market on that shoe, and then I'll kind of like just, you know, click on other shoes. Like, oh, I wonder where the market is on this. I wonder where the market is on X. And, some of the asking prices are just fucking crazy. And then you'll go on another colorway and some of the asking prices are just like garbage, like retail.
Yep.
And again, it's just super dependent on the colorway, but I feel like I'm seeing like high highs and really low lows. So it's hard to say if they're going to totally fizzle out. I feel like you'll never see like a true fizzle out. I feel like, again, it'll just be certain colorways that are popular, like it's always going to be.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And I guess for you, you're almost like a stockbroker, where you're saying like, yeah, Nike could fail, but probably the whole shoe market won't fail. So it's not, there's no risk then in having.
Yeah, you'll always have your, you know, core demographic, but you'll always have the people that keep their integrity. And, you know, when the, say, like, if Jordan left Nike, there are people who are just so dedicated to Jordan, they'd never buy another Nike shoe again.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. That's a weird little piece. And I want to chat about it, but that's our little post podcast addendum. So
dope. Anything else you want to ask before we piece?
I don't know.
Strings attached, anything.
I'll push the red button and then I'll let you know if I think of anything.
Eight.